808. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the Park City High School Drama Department inviting the community to their production of Mamma Mia. In the studio with details, I have high school drama coach Chriselle Hanson. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning, Leslie. Thank you.
I was going to say, thanks for standing out in the cold waiting for us to answer the door for you.
Of course.
Yeah. So tell us when and where is this going to be?
It will be at the Eccles Theater at the high school. Our opening night is Thursday, November 15th at 7 o'clock, 16th at 7 o'clock, and 17th at 2 o'clock and at 7 o'clock.
Okay. How much are tickets?
Tickets are $10.
Okay. And how many kids you got in the production?
In my main cast, I have about 28. On my dance company, I have about 12. On my tech crew, I have about 15. And then in the pit, I believe I have about 7.
Okay. So this is a big deal, to get this, the rights to this?
Yes. So the rights came out about mid-March, and we picked it up last year, put the rights down, and the day after, there was another arts foundation that put a lock on it. So anybody within 100 miles of that arts council couldn't do it, and we actually fell into that 100 mile radius. So we actually got them before that lock came down.
All right. And this is a great popular play. I mean, everybody grew up with the songs. Kids like it as well, even though we're talking about, songs from the 70s.
Oh, yeah. You know, all these kids, they all grew up because their parents grew up with it. So these kids all grew up with the same songs. So
okay. And musicals work really well for high school drama.
Especially our high school drama. We have a very talented group of young individuals.
Yeah. So tell us about some of the, the lead roles.
The students or mm-hmm. the... Oh. Yeah. So I have Josephine Neubecker, who plays my Donna, and she is absolutely talented. She played in The Addams Family last year. A lot of these kids are repeats. We have Katie LeBrow, who plays my Sophie. And then I have the three dads. I have Dallin Gull. I have Jonathan. Oh, shoot. What is his last name? Sorry, Jonathan. I have Jonathan. And then I have a new student. His name is Will Watkins.
Okay. And are these kids that have participated, in the Egyptian youth theater programs, things like that?
Some of them have, mm-hmm. yes. So I've actually worked with several of them since they were 11 and 12 when I worked at the Egyptian.
Ah, okay. And in terms of, musicals work well because you got lots of roles. Mm-hmm. I mean, choruses, people can participate. In terms of, some of the classics, in terms of Shakespeare, it's just there's limited roles and that's why you kind of stay away from those?
Oh, that's not true at all. Shakespeare is actually something that you can really work with because it is free domain. So you can work with it a lot. We're actually doing The Tempest coming up April, we're doing The Tempest. So, and I have about 30 kids in The Tempest.
Okay. Again, you're going to be at the Eccles Center for productions 3 nights and an afternoon.
Yes.
And again, people can just buy tickets at the door?
They can buy tickets at the door or they can buy them online. It's the GoFan website.
Okay. And you don't necessarily have to be in a drama class to participate. Auditions are open school-wide?
Yes, for the musicals.
Yeah. Okay. Did you get people outside of a drama class that join in?
Yes, I sure do. So I have 30 kids within my productions class itself. But then I have kids all over the school that came in audition. I had 60 kids come in audition for Mamma Mia.
Wow. And then you had to narrow it down to about 30?
About 30. My choreographer said, that's about all I can do. So...
Okay. Well, great. Again, if people are interested, Mamma Mia is at the Park City Eccles Center opening night. Tomorrow, 7 p.m. Tickets are $10. Chriselle, thanks for your time this morning.
Awesome. Thank you, Leslie.
From Mountain Lands, I have Steve Laurent along with Laura Benke with Mountain Life Church. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Good morning.
So, Laura, let's start with you. Why is this something the church is interested in?
Well, Leslie, just to kind of give you a little background, I grew up here in Park City, and I recently moved back. I moved away for a while, moved back because I became a single mom and my family was here, and it was a good place for me to just get the support I needed and opportunity. I have two jobs, like many Park City people that work and live here. And one of them is I'm a realtor at St. Erickson Lodge Real Estate, and I'm also the caregiving director at Mountain Life Church. And in both jobs, I feel like the motto here is I love to help people. And I come across two different situations. One with real estate, I have friends that are always asking about what, you know, the prices are, if they can afford something. They're sick and tired of always moving every 6 months because, you know, the landlords are trying to capitalize on the winter months. And then they find out that they can't afford some of the prices here. On the other hand, I recently took on the position as the caregiving director at Mountain Life. And here we are running into some more crisis situations. Believe it or not, people sometimes we find living in their cars. And it's not because they want to be a ski bum and they want to live in Park City, but because of domestic violence or they lost their job. And so it just became one of those things on my heart. Okay, well, how do we help these people? And most of the time, I just send them over to Steve at Mountainlands. But I think it would be really great if we could just give knowledge to the community. How can we help these people? So we're dealing with two different types of people. We're dealing with, okay, here's the people that are in need of affordable housing. How do we help them? And second, you know, the people who want to help them. So it's two different type of people. And that's what the seminar really is about, is we want to educate the community.
Okay, so it's happening Saturday at the church. At what time?
10. It starts at 10, and it probably will go into noon, I think, just because we have some Q&A opportunity as well.
Okay, so Steve, who is this forum for?
Well, first, let me just start with a little reminder to your listeners who don't know much about us. We're a nonprofit. We're celebrating 25 years in our community. We serve Summit and Wasatch counties. We've built almost 200 for-sale affordable homes in the area, and we own almost 300 affordable apartment units. We run a transitional housing program for people with immediate needs and temporary housing needs. We also provide a resource for people looking for housing in both communities. And we work with local governments and nonprofits on housing issues. We deal with people that Laura is describing every day on the phone and walk-ins in the office. I think, as Laura said a little bit, we're really gearing this for people that are interested just generally in housing issues. We have a lot of people that just want to get educated, get up to speed. It's a very difficult and complex area. We want to talk to people who have a very specific need for housing, or maybe know people or have friends or people they've heard of that have a need, and they can take some information that we might provide on Saturday and let them know where the resources are or help them understand things a little better. People who might want to become an advocate or get involved. We're just going to try to get some good info, maybe dispel some rumors or issues that are out there floating around the community about what affordable housing is or isn't. And, of course, we'll be in a church, and if anybody wants to come and give testimony about any experiences they've had or success stories they've had in affordable housing, I don't entirely mean that as a joke. I think there's a lot of people that have gone through affordable housing in this community, and they have great stories to tell, and they can lend a hand to people who are in need by telling their own stories. So
yeah,
that's what we're hoping to do.
So I guess, what is it you're going to, Mountainlands will present? Who else is presenting?
Yeah, so the way we have it set up is, this is a Mountainlands sponsored event, primarily Pat Matheson, who's our development coordinator, and myself. We have about probably an hour's worth of presentation. We're going to cover a variety of topics. What is the housing problem? Why does it exist? Just kind of generally, again, some more informative. What is affordable housing? What's a deed restriction? What is income eligibility, AMI, all these things we talk about and hear about in the community? Try to provide some practical information on that. What we do, Mountainlands specifically, how does affordable housing work, you know, with us, through us? And then we want to spend a lot of time talking about opportunities for housing. We are developing some new opportunities. There are others. There are developers in the community, the city itself. I don't think that anybody from the city is able to make it Saturday, but we're working with Rhoda and Jason to get some information to put out there. And similarly, from other nonprofits that we work with, Peace House and Christian Center, try to provide some resources there.
Yeah. And when you talk about affordable housing, I mean, it's really relative, right?
It's all relative. And we have a lot of people walk into our office every day, and we talk about pricing for, you know, for sale units. And they say, well, gosh, that's not affordable. It's not affordable for me. And it is all relative, Leslie. But, you know, we do what we can. We've got issues in this community, right? It costs a lot to construct. There's a lot of price in the land to start with. So you start with those two issues. It's just hard to bring the price down on something that's affordable for a lot of people who are here. And that's why we rely on rentals a lot. And that's one thing we need in our community more and more is rentals.
Yeah. I mean, and certainly what we've seen with the traditional rentals here in town, I mean, they've gone to Airbnb or VRBO, nightly rentals.
Exactly. And we see, you know, people walk into our office every day, and this is a plea I would make to the community. We hear this comment quite often, you know, I'm about to lose my apartment. My landlord has decided to turn it over to Airbnb or put it into the nightly rental pool. And, you know, if you want to do something in the community about the affordable housing issue, I think seriously consider maybe taking your resources, if you're a landlord or if you own a property or a single room, take it out of the nightly rental pool, take it out of Airbnb, and try to find somebody who can run it for 9 months, for a year, long term. There's a lot of people who sacrifice a lot to be in this town and think about making a future in this town. And I think we need longer term rentals. So if you want to pitch in, if you're out there, it's my plea to local landlords. We all know somebody who may have bought a unit when the market was down. Think about what you can do to help your community by providing a long-term rental.
All right. And when we talk about the future opportunities, I mean, I know Park City's got a bunch on the, you know, at least on the drawing board. What about Mountainlands?
We are taking in applications for 31 townhomes. We hope to get started really as soon as possible. This is at Silver Creek Village out by the Home Depot. We've been talking about this for some time, but those plans are under review right now at the county and the building department. And once we get a building permit on that, we can get the project bid and get to building. The issue is weather, maybe a little bit. So, you know, conservatively, we would say spring, late summer. But we're taking applications in right now. We've got there's about 40 or 50 of them that I'm looking at to qualify people. And there's always room for more. There's, you know, Ivory Homes has got stuff going on at Park City. There's a development called Discovery out by the Weilenman School. There's really a lot kind of on the horizon, and we're excited. It's a good time in Park City for people who are looking to own affordable housing.
And then when you hear about construction costs increasing by about 25% in a year, how does that impact you?
That's impacted us greatly. And in fact, the townhomes I'm talking about out at Silver Creek Village, I guess the issue for us especially is, you know, we got a price restricted property and you're trying to keep the price low. When the construction costs go up, we don't have any room like a traditional developer to raise the price. So we appreciate people who have been kind of waiting for some of this housing we're trying to provide. It's caused delays and the cost to borrow money has gone up a lot in the meantime. So the buying power of people who are going to live in these units is going down. So we're working through that. We appreciate everybody's patience on that. And it's tough. I'd say it over and over again. It's tough.
Yeah. So, Laura, you're offering, the church is offering free childcare if somebody wants to show up, but they need to let you know they're coming.
Yes. I would definitely contact me if you do need childcare so that we have the right amount of childcare people there. And that can just be through my email at laura@mountainlife.org. Otherwise, you know, just feel free to show up. And yeah.
Okay. So. Anything else, guys?
I just want to plug for a roommate roundup that's coming up in December. We are hosting that with, Christian Center is hosting that. We participate December 4th and 11th. Those are Tuesdays from 4 to 5 p.m. And that's an opportunity for seasonal workers to get to know each other, to get to know landlords, vice versa. You might have Pete or Rob or somebody on later on to talk about that. But remember those dates, especially if you have an opportunity to house somebody for the season.
Okay. Steve Lauren and Laura Benke, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie.
Thanks, Leslie.
The Park City Council meets in work sessions starting Thursday at 4:15 in the studio with a preview. I have City Manager Diane Foster along with Special Events Manager Jenny Dearson. Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's see, Jenny, this is probably your topic. Staff delivering the Park City Sunday report for 2018. It looks like organizers complied with everything in the contract and didn't operate every Sunday in response to event fatigue. So how are you feeling about that? All work out?
I think it did all work out. You know, this is the first year of their new contract. It's a 3-year contract. And I think Silly Market continues to lead the charge, specifically with sustainability efforts. They do so much. I just wanted to point out that they continue to maintain a 76% diversion rate for the waste that they have at that event. And that is an incredible statistic, seeing the scope of that event and what they do. There's really no other event out there in the city that is doing that. And they're not only are they doing that at their event, but then they're leading the charge with a lot of the other events around town and showing them how to implement some of the things that they're doing. So rather that's reminding people to bring their reusable bags or, you know, the composting and all the things they do at the market, the transportation initiatives that the market continues to push. They're really leading the charge on those sustainability efforts, and they should be commended for doing so.
Yeah, certainly they've had a lot of friction over the years between them and Main Street businesses. I mean, is that getting smoothed over as well?
You know, I do think that that's, you know, continues to be a working progress. It is a good relationship that we have. So there is a working group in which HPCA participates in with the Silly Market and some council liaisons and staff. And we go through and we look at that vendor mix and we look at ways to better program the street and work on better coordination. We are looking in the future at potentially changing the purpose of that working group. We want to continue to focus on locally made products and artists at the market. And, you know, Michael's doing a lot of work and getting feedback from the merchants and just seeing how we can continue to increase that partnership between the city, the Silly Market, and HPCA.
All right. And I think it was just last year that you cut the fees that they were receiving, and that's worked out okay? Or
yeah, and so that was part of the new contract. We have reduced the city services, and to be fair, it's for Silly Market and events across the board. And so that was the first year of this. So we had about $60,000 in city services that we did waive. We also gave them another $15,000 because of their leading sustainability efforts. And then this year with the bollard installation on Lower Main Street, Silly Market actually helped us out a bunch with that installation. And so really we ended up at a pretty much a wash in those city services for this year. But again, all of those efforts all together. You know, I do want to mention again that Silly Market has continued to be a community partner. And so rather that was helping Big Stars Bright Nights through the summer, Miners Day and Tour of Utah with their sustainability efforts, and then also helping the city with 4th of July and organizing that event. They're an incredible community partner.
Okay, and then moving on, boy, we've got first Sundance, and then we've got right there on the tails of that, the Freestyle and Freeski World Championships happening late January, early February, and I guess overlapping by 3 days?
There will be a 3-day overlap with a Sundance Film Festival for the World Championships. I think it's important. USSA, so that's the United States Ski and Snowboard Association, has done an incredible job organizing this event with Sundance, with the city and the county, and across the resorts and within our jurisdiction. This is an exciting event, and so coordinating kind of that first weekend when Sundance is going on, the first events will actually be held at Solitude Resorts, and that was done intentionally to make sure that the Sundance Film Festival could continue to run in the city and the county. There is an opening event, opening ceremony event at Canyons Resort on February 2nd that we are focused on as far as transportation initiatives. And I think this is an exciting time for the community. You know, Leslie, we are incredibly lucky to have the things that we have going on between an international film festival and the 2019 FIS World Championships. We have more than 1,300 of the top winter athletes coming to Park City to show off their incredible talent, and I think it'll be a great opportunity for our community.
So we're talking about 1,300 athletes. Where do we put them? Are they staying in Salt Lake?
So I think there's a majority, there's a, actually a couple of different lodging opportunities. I know some are at Solitude, some are in the county, and some are in Park City. So just depending on the competition venues. And I think it'll be an exciting time, again, to have those athletes from around the world in our community.
Yeah. Can you recall a time when Park City held two events of this magnitude in the same week? Or is this a first?
I think we've done a lot. So just going back to 2002 and the Winter Olympics, I think that would probably be the largest event that we have held. And I think the Park City and Summit County have a long history of these types of events. So rather that was America's opening in 1985, we've held several world championships at Deer Valley in 2003 and 2011. We have annual World Cup events. And so while this is a big event, I think the city and the county in this community is pretty used to hosting these types of events in town. And so I don't want to, you know, say by any means that this isn't a big deal. It is a big deal. But it's an opportunity to show off what we do best.
Organizers have submitted an event fee reduction application. We're talking like $220,000. So, is that something that we've got in the budget to?
So this is an event we have been planning actually for a couple of years and looking out far into the future. And so we have within the city gone ahead and planned for increased transit initiatives, public safety, and some of the other fees that come with this event. Again, it is a big event, and transportation, sustainability, and public safety, as well as communications, will be our focus at this time.
Yeah. So have we had those discussions, Diane, in terms of, I mean, why we continue to do this, have events like this? I mean, Sundance isn't enough.
So this has been an event that's been planned for quite a long time, right? It was a number of years ago. In fact, Jenny Smith was still here when she and Bob Wheaton headed over to, I think Mike Gore was the head of the Canyons at that time, and they were all, I believe, in Barcelona when this was awarded. So this has been quite a long time. I do think, you know, for this community, the commitment to youth is significant. And the idea that you can take your kids for free to this event is amazing. And even though there are very good estimates that have been done, the mayor and I got a briefing the other day from Jenny and the whole team about how we're looking for this. They have done a significant amount of planning. And I do want to remind folks that you know, if you look at Sundance last year, most people thought that the event was down. It was actually up. I believe it was about 8%. And the reason people felt like it was down was that the team did a great job mitigating. And so I will tell you, we have a heightened focus. Jenny and her team and across all the departments, transportation, public safety, even parks, streets, et cetera, they're ready for it. And they're even planning for snow.
Yeah. So are we getting some help then from the county or other? I mean, I guess, here we've got Park City taxpayers paying, you know, $220,000 that's not coming in and still having to deal with all the impacts.
So that's actually a decision. So when I say Jenny's team, I should also make sure that I point out that she recently had a meeting which included and frequently includes people from the Summit County Sheriff's Department, as well as Caroline Rodriguez with transportation planning for the county. And whether or not fees are waived on that front is a decision of the county. We don't influence that.
Okay. 600 volunteers are needed to make this, to pull all of this off. Again, what about housing them?
You know, I think what USSA does is they pull a lot from our local community and looking for volunteers within this area. So a lot of local residents are what we're looking at to help fill those positions. There are also other volunteers that will come from, you know, other parts of the region to this event, and they are working on those housing options for them just like they do for the athletes and coaches coming to the event. So I think it'll be, again, I think it's a really exciting time for the event, and again, all opportunities or all competitions on Hill are free and open to the public, and just an exciting time to see world-class athletes in our community.
Okay. Diane's scheduled to get a new treasurer. Did our other retire, or is this a new position?
Yeah, Lori Klett has been with the city for, I believe it's 23 years. She's been a huge help to the city. She actually came from, I believe it was Deloitte and Touche. For the past, I believe, actually, I think we're going to have a full year of overlap. This is one of those positions that's very critical to the city. All the positions are critical, but these are ones I remember Tom Backley said to me one time, if your police chief and finance director are great, then you got a whole lot less stuff to worry about. And we're fortunate at the city. One of the things that's actually different from when Lori was at the city, and Lori is still actually employed by the city. She'll be employed through January. And they've been doing an overlap with Mindy and Lori training every single week. One of the things, Lori had the position of treasurer and finance director. And since Lori took that job in more recent years, the state auditor has recommended that that not be held by one person. Now, in a lot of small towns, it's not possible to do that. But when we we actually have been planning for this for a number of years. Lori was told us, way ahead of time that she was going to be retiring, and so we were able to plan. So we've actually split the positions. Rebecca Gillis is our finance director and has been for the past year, And Mindy will be taking over the treasurer role. I talked to Lori last week. She said, absolutely, Mindy is ready to go. And in fact, we'll even have some time where Mindy has the title and the full ownership of the position, and they'll still be, Lori will still be available to for support. And that's a we're fortunate to be able to do that.
Okay. You also, I guess Jenny will be presenting the special event fee reduction approvals for the second half or part two of 2019? Is there the second half of the fiscal
yes,
year?
Yes, it is the second half of the fiscal year. So we break it up on every, there's two parts of the year when applicants can apply for fee reduction. So this is the second part of that. We did receive 11 applications, and the total cost without the World Championships was about $19,000. Staff is recommending 11,000 of those approvals. I think what's important is we continue to work on the special event fee reduction process. We do have events that have started budgeting for those costs, and what we're trying to do is make it very transparent and do a good estimate of what those fees will be so that events can start to stand on their own and pay for some of those costs of that event.
Okay. And finally, the council considering an ordinance amending the code regulating the review of disposal of significant parcels of real property. Are we talking about a particular piece of property here, Diane?
We're actually talking about a particular type of property here, and that is affordable housing. So the city, especially the two things that we do when we buy affordable housing, is that for a period of time we will own the affordable housing, and we will also so while it's being built, the other situation where we own that property is when we transfer it, when we buy a piece of property to update the deed restrictions, as we frequently do. And I believe, and I think we'll be proposing this to council, that it's an unreasonable burden because we're holding those properties for such a short period of time. And the idea that we have to publicly notice this and delay the resale, particularly of properties that we purchased to update the deed restriction, that it's not really reasonable. So the idea is that we'll take out of their property that we own that's affordable housing, and then temporary special event master festival leases. So a lease is considered a property transaction, and we're doing that, such as when we're renting the Bob Wells Plaza or leasing the Bob Wells Plaza or leasing, we lease Miners Hospital to Sundance for their peak season. We're just asking council if they want to take that away.
Okay. Anything else?
One thing I do want to, again, thank all the voters, those who voted for treasurer and those who voted against. I think we had, in fact, around City Hall, we were calling it Democracy Day because it was really an exciting time. And it was exciting to see so many unfamiliar faces. So thanks to everyone who turned out.
Okay. Diane Foster and Jenny Durson, thanks for your time this morning. Well, after a lot of effort to try and stop the wall from being built along Interstate 80 there in front of Jeremy Ranch, it's all but done. We invited one of those who led the effort to stop the construction, Tom Farkas. He's back in to tell us what he thinks about it. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. It's nice to be here.
Yeah, so what do you think?
Well, first thought that comes to mind is, other than, besides that, Mrs. Lincoln, how did you like the play? We tried to stop the wall. Obviously, we were unsuccessful in doing that. But the wall was certainly not justified. We were told by UDOT that the only way that we could possibly stop it from being constructed was to file a lawsuit, and we investigated that and found that that really wasn't going to be feasible for us in the amount of money that would cost and experience that lawyers had in trying to sue UDOT. And it's ironic that about a year and a half ago, when I had one of my first meetings with UDOT staff and presented our information about how they were not meeting their own cost criteria, one of their staff members said, well, that's too bad. If you don't like what we're doing, you can sue us. So that is their attitude. They know that they can pretty much do whatever they want. And I'm not sure what their record is with lawsuits, but they probably can handle them pretty well.
Yeah. So in terms of that, it's you're not, you've ended it.
No, actually not. The wall is up. There's really nothing we can do about that. But the wall was not justified. And so even though we haven't been able to stop the wall, we are looking for justice. And we made a petition to our state legislators to see if we could get a legislative audit done of how UDOT conducted themselves and presented the information to do the wall. We're pretty confident, we've documented, it's on our website, citizensagainstthewall.org, that what they did was in violation of their own policy, the Utah Administrative Code, and federal guidelines. And they basically, knowing the power that they have, can ignore any challenge. So we're asking the legislature to look into that, and actually at a September 18th meeting of the Legislative Audit Subcommittee, they authorized a specific audit to be done, not of UDOT in general, but specifically of, what I guess they call it, a limited focus audit, specifically on what UDOT did up here on the wall in Jeremy Ranch. And we present to them our concerns about how UDOT did not meet their cost criteria. Not only for the 18-foot wall that they originally proposed, but for what you find out there now. And what's actually out there now, a wall on top of a berm, is not even within the Utah UDOT noise policy criteria. Also, the way that they conducted the balloting was not within their guidelines. So the subcommittee did authorize audit to go forward. That was in September. They had to wait till their staff, they get a lot of requests for audits. Their staff are very busy. And I just found out last week that staff had been assigned to do the audit. They've already met with UDOT to notify them that it's being conducted and to get documents from them. We expect to meet with the audit team sometime after Thanksgiving. And it's probably not going to have any impact on our wall, but we in Summit County or any other area in the state of Utah could be faced with this kind of situation in the future. And I think UDOT needs to be held accountable for how they did their analysis and how they conducted themselves with the community. So that's what we're hoping to come out of this. I mean, one of the things, and I've had experience in other states with other issues, where there are adjudicating bodies that if there is an issue between citizens and a state agency, that can be addressed here in Utah, apparently with UDOT in particular. You challenge them, they say, too bad. The only way to deal with them is to sue them. So we're hoping that maybe through this process also there will be some other policies or procedures that could be set up to actually hold UDOT accountable. It's like having the fox guarding the hen house. They just say, well, we're doing what we think we're doing is right, and too bad for you.
So when do you expect that audit to be done?
Because it's limited in scope, very specific, the audit staff people say they expect it could be done by January, February.
Okay. So I've certainly seen the wall from Interstate 80 there, not from the Jeremy Ranch side. I mean, what are the views like from there?
They're pretty oppressive. I mean, if you go on the Rasmussen side, because Rasmussen dips lower than I-80, it's pretty pretty oppressive.
Yeah. There was also some concern, I think, from you in terms of noise perhaps being thrown to Pine Brook. Any way to test that?
Well, actually, I asked our group to do some measurements with a phone app. It may not be the most accurate thing, but we're not looking for necessarily exact numbers. We're looking at incremental numbers. And I asked them to measure the noise before the wall went up and after the wall. I haven't gotten the full results back in. I did get an email from one person in Pine Brook that said that their noise level is higher than it was before the wall. I also just the other day talked to one of the folks in Jeremy Point, which are at the end of the wall, and they say that the noise level now is higher than it was before the wall. And that's because the noise in wavelengths, actually refracts around the top of the wall and the edges of the wall and can increase people that are beyond the protection of the wall.
So the wall's not long enough for them.
Exactly. I mean, at some point, the wall And just physically, because of the change in elevation, the wall had to stop somewhere. Well, I'm sorry, the wall shouldn't have been there in the first place, which would have not increased the noise level for these people. And in fact, there may be more people that are going to experience an increase in noise because of the wall than those that are intended to have their noise level reduced. I don't have any hard facts on that. I did talk to a neighbor that knows somebody along Saddleback, and they said, well, we're not sure we're really getting, you know, what we were led to believe in the way of a reduction. So those that are getting the reduction may not be getting as much as they thought. Those that aren't getting a reduction are actually, you know, maybe getting an increase.
Last I drove by, I hadn't seen any graffiti yet. Do we have somebody monitoring that? Because I know that was a concern also of your group.
We all drive by it every day, so it's not a matter of monitoring. If it happens, we'll see it. And I guess we can report it to UDOT, but I'm not sure UDOT what they would do about it. You know, the wall, we were fighting. We were originally thinking that a wall would look very good, but UDOT doesn't really care about what the wall looks like. So we dug into their policies and procedures and are fighting based on them violating their old rules and regulations. The Summit County Council, though, tried to work with UDOT to make what they were doing look better. At certain times, they said, well, maybe we'll plant some vegetation to make it look better. Well, obviously, they didn't do that because there's no water source. So their last effort at supposedly trying to make it look better is they will paint it to blend in with the surrounding environment. Well, what color are they going to paint it? There's a couple sections in there that look like they're a cream color, which is not very attractive. The other part is, I guess, the natural concrete color. But what color would you think would make it blend in with the surroundings? I mean, can they paint it white in the winter? You know, brown in the summer and sort of a green in the shoulder seasons. I don't want to minimize hashtag Me Too movement, but quite frankly, I feel like the Summit County had been harassed by UDOT in this whole process, and maybe if we had a say, we would ask the wall to be painted pink.
Okay, I need to leave it there, Tom, but let us know what happens with that audit.
Certainly will. Thank you.
It's Tom Farkas again with Citizens Against the Wall. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. KPCW News Time now, 8:51. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, the Park City Ski and Snowboard Freeski Team offering a couple of different programs for youth this winter. On the phone is the director of the Freeski Division, Hatch Haslock. In the studio, I have Big Mountain Coach Aaron Pretorius, along with Park and Pipe Head Coach Ryan Weibel. Good morning to all of you.
Morning.
Good morning.
Hatch, let's start with you. In terms of how many programs does Park City Ski and Snowboard offer here in the Freeski Division?
Well, our Freeski Division is basically comprised of the Big Mountain team as well as our Park and Pipe team.
Okay, so what kind of different choices are they offering this year? I mean, one day a week up to 7 days a week? Or?
Yeah, we've added on the Big Mountain team, we've added a four-day-a-week program, so we have 1 day through 4 days, and then on the Park and Pipe side, we've got 1 day through 6 days, so we've got a lot of options there.
Okay. Now, are they all based out of Park City Mountain, or maybe one from the Park City base, the other from the Canyons Village side?
We're all based out of the Park City base area, but we definitely will venture off to, you know, we have obviously this huge, amazing venue, and so we venture off both directions, depending on the day and the conditions and all that sort of stuff.
Okay, so Eric, Big Mountain, that's basically what, skiing top to bottom as fast as you can with some big jumps in between?
Yeah, basically. Well, we group the athletes with similar abilities, and we do drills to advance and develop their skills and abilities. We teach them how to pick out fun, big lines to ski down the mountain, ski powder in the trees. We hit jumps, we hit cliffs. Basically we have the kids, some of the kids are hitting like 50-foot cliffs and doing huge laid out backflips, things like that. You know, we're teaching them how to get the abilities to just ski basically from the top to the bottom without stopping and, you know, having fun and skiing really, really fun lines.
Yeah, I'm just like, my kid's not doing that. So are there places on the mountain where you can really let loose like that?
Oh, yeah. We're skiing, you know, Jupiter 9990. Basically, we're skiing the top of the mountain, top half of the mountain with the athletes, yeah.
Yeah, so is there a way to practice that in the summer?
Yeah, we have the Center of Excellence where the kids are, they can come and jump on the trampolines and get the abilities of being in the air and doing tricks in the air on the trampolines.
Okay, and then Ryan, you're spending time both in the Super Pipe and then in the terrain parks as well?
Yeah, we cover pretty much everything from rails, jumps, half pipe, and then kind of in between, they're coming up with new features all the time that mix that slope style half pipe into one.
Yeah, and does a kid, I mean, they sign up, or do they focus on the pipe or focus on the terrain park, or at this level they just do both?
Yeah, as you get a little, you know, further up the competition line, it's definitely more popular to focus on one or the other, but this year we're actually making an effort to try to get a little more crossover between the two, so everybody's hopefully a more well-rounded skier and able to ski, yeah, all of those different elements.
Okay. So, of course, we've got the half pipe there at the base of the mountain. Any word on when that gets built this year?
We're hoping for early January if it keeps cold and we get some good snow coming. So that will be, yeah, that's the ideal situation.
So you'll spend early season then in the terrain parks?
Yep. Yeah, as soon as, you know, we'll get our terrain park open at Three Kings there, they usually do a really good job of getting that ready as soon as possible for us. In December, and then we also do stuff over at the Utah Olympic Park. They build a nice jump over there that we've been using more the last season and plan to use more this season as well.
Okay. Hey, so Hatch, you got any kids that could be competing in the World Championships?
Yeah, we do. We've got, certainly some of our alumni that are on the U.S. ski team that, you know, have been Olympians have a real good shot of being there. But as far as athletes that are working with us, we work with some athletes from Chile as well as from Ireland, and that have some real good shots at being qualified for the World Championships.
Gosh, that's awesome. Okay, so if parents are listening and their kids are interested, it's not too late to register for the season?
Definitely not. We've got programs open right now. We're running dry land and, you know, we've got things happening so they can get involved and get started and ease their way in, and we'll get skiing in a couple weeks.
Yep. Okay. Guys, anything else you wanted to mention?
Yeah, can I add something? This Friday night, we're doing a team bonding night at the Utah Olympic Park. We're going to be showing the new TGR movie, Far Out. It's going to be free. And if you're interested in joining the team, come on out and meet me and other athletes and get more information on the program.
Okay. Ryan, anything from you?
Oh, we're just looking forward to the year, and yeah, come join us.
Okay. And Hatch?
Yeah, just, we're excited, and we're excited that we have some cold temperatures, and I think we're looking at possibly having one of the better openings we've had in a very long time. So we're going to be into action with the park and pipe teams. We start up the week of the first week of December, and then Big Mountain will start a couple weeks later, so we can hopefully have some more access up high.
Okay. Guys, be careful out there. Thanks.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:58.